Is this good? Yeah? Okay. My name's Barry. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. And that reading is why I'm here today. John stopped me outside of our back in-person meeting and said, we're having a... Oh, no, you didn't. You texted me. He texted me and called me. That's right. And then we discussed it and asked me to come and speak here. And because I try to do as much service as I can in this program, because it has given me so much and I can't keep it unless I give it back, I said yes. And I'm very honored to be here today. Before I left, my wife said, which meeting are you speaking at? And I said, it's the early bird meeting. And she said, it probably won't be very crowded, right? And I said, yeah, I think it's a small room and there probably won't be more than 15 people there. So the first 15 of you can stay, and if the rest, I got in my car and I left Burbank, and over the next 3 hours and 40 minutes, I built up a volume number of resentments on the way here that is staggering even for an Al-Anon. I've been mad at everybody for the last 3 hours and 40 minutes. I got here and there was an extraordinarily long line to check in. And I got about halfway through the line and was standing kind of in the lobby there. And I closed my eyes and I said the Serenity Prayer because I could not change the line. I knew this meeting was going to happen at 5 o'clock. And if I had to give this meeting in my shorts and polo shirt that I arrived here in, then I was just going to do that. So I let go of my resentments in the lobby. If you're in the lobby and you're hit by a resentment out there, it's one of mine. You don't have to keep it. You can, you know, give it away. The line did move and I was able to get up to the room and get a little less smelly. I'll just say a couple things first. My home group, we've been back in person since July. We never went to Zoom, actually. We had a couple of small, very small in-person meetings that some people hosted, but we went back in July, and it's just been so wonderful to be back. And this is even better. Like, to see all of you here and to see everybody in person, and just the number of people that have shown up for this is just great, because I've heard from a lot of people that Zoom just didn't cut it. You know, Zoom meetings got people through and they did what they, you know, it got us through and it got us help, but it just really didn't cut it. And so coming back in person has been wonderful. So I want to thank all of you for being here today. Again, thank John for asking me to be here. I'm going to start in the middle. I'm going to start how I got here. I got to Al-Anon on April 1st, 2000. So it'll be 22 years next Friday, I think. So I got here because I was going to marry a sober member of AA. And I tell a little bit of her story during this. She says it's okay, and it's just part of, and everything that I tell of her story, I bring it back to me and tell you why I'm still here in this program. So I got here purely out of common sense. I didn't get here on my hands and knees. I got here because, probably before I came, we had probably been engaged for about 6 months, but we had been dating for a year before that. She was sober at the beginning when we started dating, and she would say to me, she went to a Friday night meeting every Friday night, and that was it. And you know, Fridays when you're, you know, Friday's kind of date night when you start out. But she would say to me, I have to go to this meeting. It's part of, if I don't go to this meeting, I can't stay sober and I can't be a good, at that time, girlfriend or partner to you. So it was like, that's fine, whatever you need to do. It was a closed meeting, so I actually didn't go ever to that meeting with her. There was another meeting that she went to that was an open meeting. And every once in a while, I would go to that open meeting with her, usually at the promise of breakfast afterwards. So we would go to that meeting, and she would say to me, program is such a huge part of my life. There's this other program called Al-Anon, and if we're going to be together, you might want to check it out. It's like, okay. And I didn't go. And then she had friends, some of her friends in AA were also in Al-Anon, and they would come to me and they would say, you know, you guys have been dating for a very long time. I go to Al-Anon. If you ever want to go to Al-Anon, I'll be happy to take you to a meeting. Okay, thanks. And then for some reason, and I honestly, through the steps and through talking to people, I don't remember why all of a sudden I said yes. Like, there was no triggering, you know, there was no event or anything. I think it was just out of common sense. I think it was about, you know what, we're 6 months away from this wedding. Maybe I should probably see what it's about. So I called the friend and I said, you still got Al-Anon? And she said, oh, yes. And I said, okay, I think I want to try it out. And she said, okay, I go Saturday mornings and hear where I go, and I'll meet you there. And I said, okay, great. And I met her there, and I was not crazy about it. It wasn't about the message. I wasn't crazy about kind of the structure of the meeting and how people were chosen to speak and things like that. And so luckily, I didn't let it deter me, and 3 nights later, I went to the Tuesday night Little White Chapel meeting in Burbank, and I've been going there for what is almost 22 years now. And so I'm glad I didn't leave. I'm glad I tried more meetings, and I went to that meeting. I went back to that Saturday morning meeting every now and then, but I found other meetings in the Valley and in L.A. and Hollywood and just all over the place. And that's, that's one of the fantastic things. When I was... and I'll get to this later, but I was service board. I was service board chairperson in 2012, and at that time we had about 424 live meetings in LA County. That's not even counting Orange County or Ventura or anything, and that's just awesome. I mean, that's, you can always find a live meeting. You may have to drive there, and it may take you 45 minutes in traffic, and you may miss the beginning. But you can always find a meeting, and that's what one of the things I love so much about living in Southern California. So I went to that meeting, and at that time that meeting was about 70-80 people on a regular basis, and it was great, and I loved it, and the people were laughing, and I didn't know what they were laughing about at first, but it seemed like someplace I wanted to be, and I heard little snippets of things that were kind of starting to seep through. So I'll come back to that. I'm the oldest child of three and a half. My father remarried, and there's a fourth. But I grew up with two other brothers and my brothers are considerably young. One is 4 years younger than me, and then one is 5 years younger than him. So we're kind of spread out. We lived in Northern Orange County, and and things were pretty good. But then, when I got a little older, my mother would let my mom and dad would have me babysit my brothers while they would go out. And I always noticed that my mom seemed to come home a little tipsy. I couldn't go to sleep until they were home. Like, I had to stay up. And then it became a little bit of an obsession. It became a waiting for them. And I would stand on the chair looking out over our backyard, which was then on the street, and I remember just watching the headlights to see if it was that car, because there was a group of them, about eight of them, four couples that went out considerably a lot. They And in the summer, it was kind of like one big party. We lived in a condo complex, a townhouse complex, so there was a community pool. And we would always be out at the pool on the weekends, like every summer. And then, like, they would drink, like, the whole time. Like, all we'd be there, like, you know, well, the kids would get there, like, early, like at 11. But then the parents would come, like, about 2, and then there would just be drinking until it was time to eat around 6. And we'd order pizza, and it was a very long day. But then there's sometimes there was drinking into the night, and it, you know, I know it made me uncomfortable. I didn't know until I got here why. Also, when I was young, before my other two brothers were born, I was very close with my maternal grandparents. My grandfather had been married once before, had a wife and some kids, but my grandmother had never been married before. They got married, and I was her first grandchild, and she just worship the ground I walked on, both of them. And I was with them a lot. They lived close, and I would go over there, and it was great, and we'd go in the pool, and they'd take me out to dinner, and we had a great time. But every night at 5 o'clock, it was, as my grandfather would say, Martuni time. And they would pour some drinks, and I think on a numerous occasion, they let me taste it. I will say right now, I do not have that. I am not an alcoholic. I am purely an Al-Anon member. I didn't get it. I thank God I didn't get it, because with all the signs, I really could have got it. But I never felt unsafe around them. My grandmother died when I was 10. We went to see her in the hospital, and my mother had told me that it was from smoking, she had lung cancer, and from liver cancer, because she drank considerably. And I didn't really understand that at that time. I didn't really understand alcoholism. As I became a teenager, you know, there were a few movies out there about alcoholism, and every once in a while you'd see it on TV, and I kind of would watch those, and I, you know, kind of get some information, and then you get a little older and you find out a little bit more. I don't know. Maybe not everybody does, but I did. And it's, I'm sure, what, you know, one of the things that got me here today. Like I said, when I was a teenager, I would wait for them to get home. I would wait, and it was agony. It was horrible, because I didn't know if they were out there dead or not, because they always drove. There was an Uber. It was the 70s. I mean, you know, they always drove. But they always made it home alive. They always made it home alive. And then I was a very good boy through middle school and through high school. And I knew that if I got really good grades and I was in all the activities at school, that eventually time was going to come and I was going to get to move out and I was going to get to go to college. And I wouldn't have to worry about taking care of everybody in the family that I had felt. Now, again, I didn't fully realize it until I got into Al-Anon, but I do definitely remember the first few days at college and just thinking relief, just thinking that I didn't have to worry about them. About 6 months before I left for college, my father decided that he wanted to move out. And so he moved out, which was very, very hard on my mother. She probably put a little bit more of that on me than she should have. But I want to say it right now, in case I forget it later on, and we've all heard this before, but you know, my parents only had the tools that they were given. She was raised by an alcoholic mother. And my grandfather, I think, loved her. I know my grandfather loved her, but I know that there were some issues there. But you know, she had she raised us with the best tools that she had, and the same thing with my father. His parents were not alcoholics, but his dad was kind of a nasty SOB, even though he didn't really drink, and just not loving and not warm. And he did the best with the tools that he had, you know. So I learned here there's no sense in blaming them because they did the best that they could. So like I said, I went away to college. I was relieved and it was fine. And I had a great time. I did a lot of partying myself, but I didn't have the disease. I met the woman who became my wife the night after I graduated high school. We both worked at a movie theater. And it was her first day. She had just come to work for the summer. And we were there and we were working together. And she said, "Oh, where are you going to college?" And I told her, "Oh my God, I go there." And then, so I had this friend. And so we were kind of together the whole summer. We did not date. We did not date the whole summer. It was, she had a boyfriend who she had started seeing at Santa Barbara. And we did not date, but we were close friends. And then we were close friends through college. But she always drank way more than the rest of us. At that point, we thought it was college. We just thought, you know, she just drinks more than the rest of us. There were a lot of people who drank more than the rest of us. Sorry. And she was a year ahead of me, so she graduated. She moved home to Los Angeles. I graduated a year later. I did a year in Lake Tahoe at a casino, and I worked the graveyard shift. And what's funny is, so when you work the graveyard shift and you work from midnight to 8 and then you get off, it's kind of like, you know, it's your afterwards happy hour. It's after work, even though it's 8 a.m. And I remember, what's funny is sometimes we would go out for drinks. When you work graveyard, you kind of stay up, maybe you have some dinner, and then you try to sleep during the day. It's miserable if you've never worked graveyard, I will say that. Luckily, I only had to do it for about 8 weeks, but sometimes we would go drink, and I would come home, and I would say to my mom, "Oh, I said, "Yeah, well, a few of us went out for drinks afterwards." She said, "It's 8:30 in the morning," and I'd say, "Yeah, but it's not, but it's, I've been working all night, and now we're going to go, we go home, and we go to bed," and then she would say to me, "Because you know your grandmother was an alcoholic," and I said, "Yeah, I know, And I would get that, and then I think she was happy when I stopped working graveyard and I moved to swing shift, and then I was drinking at 12:30 like everybody else. I don't know. After that, I moved home to Los Angeles, and I got a job sort of in my field, and things were good. I had a roommate, we had a good time, and every once in a while I would see this friend, and we would get together for a movie or for dinner or something. One night she invited me over. She was living with a guy who she wasn't dating, they were just roommates, but she said, "Come on over, we'll make dinner, we're gonna watch this movie." Okay, great. And then she didn't even make it halfway through the movie, like, because she was drunk, passed out in her room. That's when I thought that my friend might have a little bit of a problem. But I didn't say anything because I didn't really know anything. I hadn't been here yet. I didn't really know anything. We lost touch for about probably 2 to 3 years. We might call each other on the phone. This was way before texting. I mean, so we might call, you know, and it was before cell phones. So, you know, you'd call and there was an answering machine, or they may or may not pick up. But we would keep in touch. But then there was a lengthy period of time where we didn't hear from one another. And then I forget what happened, but one of us called the other one and we said, "What are you doing?" And we went to lunch, and over lunch, she told me that she had started going to AA. And that was great, and I was very, very happy for her, because like I said, from that last incident, I knew there might be some sort of a problem, and so we went to lunch. She told me this, and then I was looking to move someplace, and I was looking for an apartment, and at one point she said, "I think there's an open apartment in my building," And I was having trouble finding a place. I went over, I looked at it, I moved in, and 3 months later, we started going out. She was going AA, like I said, this whole time. And it was great. I mean, it was really good. I didn't know much about it. She'd tell me a little bit about it. You know, she'd tell me kind of about the steps and what, you know, the spirituality and what the program was to her and her friends. And I would hang out with her friends and they would tell me and it was good. And we kind of kept dating. And then it kind of became clear that we were going to get married. And so, we got engaged. I got here 6 months later. I started going to that meeting, and we both had a program, and things were good. At the time, she smoked cigarettes, and it bothered me. And she never smoked in her apartment. She never smoked in my apartment. She always went out on the balcony and smoked. But like, I thought it was kind of disgusting. My parents didn't smoke. And then I got this bright idea that I said, here's what I'm going to do. We're going to mail out the wedding announcements, and then I'm going to tell her if she doesn't stop smoking, then I'm not going to marry her. Right, you're laughing because we know how ridiculous that sounds. And I had Al-Anon at the time. Now, I didn't have a lot of Al-Anon. Like I said, we were 6 months, so I didn't have a lot of Al-Anon, but I had some Al-Anon. And I don't remember if I told anybody in Al-Anon that, because I thought if I tell them, they're going to tell me that's not a good idea. So I think I kept that secret to myself. But I did realize that it wasn't a good idea. And that I loved her, and that if it was her, you know, voyage to stop smoking at one point, then she would stop smoking. So I went to this meeting, like I said, that was 70, 80 people. I kind of sat in the back most of the time. I would help put away chairs, and I would talk to people. But, you know, it was kind of intimidating. And here's the thing. I'm an extrovert. Like, I love talking to people. And it was intimidating. But I kept going back. And then I ended up sitting next to two people. There were two friends I made. One guy, one woman. And I would kind of always sit by them. And I think, I don't know, they weren't threatening. I don't know what it was. But they, you know, I would kind of sit and I would talk to them. Eventually, I asked the guy. He said, you need a sponsor. Would you like me to be your sponsor? Well, that was a little too much commitment because I wasn't sure I was staying. So I said, well, why don't we just work together for a little while? He said, okay, that's fine. Okay. So we worked together for a little while, and then I said, okay, you're kind of my sponsor. And he said, yeah, kind of. So then he was my sponsor. And he was probably my sponsor for like the first 2 years. And I was going to Al-Anon. I was going to this meeting. We got married. And this guy was my sponsor. And then he left. And I'm not sure. I saw him years later, but he stopped coming to this meeting and he stopped answering my phone calls. And there was another guy in this meeting, and I really liked what he had, and I asked him to be my sponsor. And so he was my sponsor. In the meantime, we'd been married for a couple of years, and then we did a bathroom remodel. And at the very tail end of the bathroom remodel, about 3 days after Christmas, I woke up one morning, and my wife woke up, and she said, I drank a fifth of vodka last night. She's all, and I'm done. I don't want to drink anymore, and I would like it if we could find meetings to go to today. And I said, okay. And I had probably, like I said, had Al-Anon for a couple, two or three years at this point. I had enough not to just bolt. And so I went to a meeting, and I told the people at the meeting, and I'm sure I cried. And then that was it. She didn't drink anymore. Like, that was it. She had had one bad night, and then that was all. And, you know, they they say that very rarely does the alcoholic start on day one in AA and stay and then just stay. You know, very rarely are there not slips. And I didn't really hear that in the beginning. And I kind of thought, why not? Like, why wouldn't you just stay? But as I talked to more people and I did more reading and I was in the program more, I realized why. You know, why? Because it's not a choice. It's not like she said, ooh, a fifth of vodka. You know, I'll just, you know, the whole reckoning of, but then I'm going to have to give up my time. Like, that's not how it works. So then she was sober. I had, like I said, this other sponsor. I started doing service at the meeting that I'm in. The meeting that I was in, it was kind of crazy. Like, there were a lot of personalities and stuff, but I did love it. But then I decided that I was going to be secretary of that meeting, and I was going to be secretary. And what was great was I was going to whip that meeting into shape. Then I got to be secretary, and I would sit there, and I would, kind of go through the readings, and I would greet the leader when the leader came. And what I realized is, if you have 6 months or you have 36 years, then it's still not easy for everybody to lead a meeting. And we would have people come, and people would come and be so nervous sitting there saying, I don't know the format, I don't know what to do. And I realized that the whole point of being there and being the secretary is to just be there for the person who came to lead the meeting. Just be there for them. And that made the whole thing. I'm going to say this a number of times, but that was one of the gifts of the program. I mean, that was one of the things that helped me out, was just to be there for the person sitting there, and that was just, I'm so grateful for that. So I've been going to that meeting. We've been going to our respective programs, and then we had a baby. We had a little girl that we had been trying to have, and it wasn't happening, which is odd because at 17, they tell you it always happens. At 33, it's not so, you know, not always so easy. So we've been trying, and then I got fired, and then we got pregnant. And so I got another job No, I was still unemployed that whole time. That's right. So she was pregnant. I was unemployed. She was working up until it was time to have the baby. And then the baby came early. Like, our daughter wasn't due until like January 11th. And on December 18th, I had been out Christmas shopping, and I came home and I said something funny to my wife, neither of which we can remember to this day, and her water broke, and I raced her from Burbank to Cedars-Sinai Hospital at 6:30 in the evening, which isn't the easiest thing to do. So we got there. Our daughter was born by 11 p.m., so, which is, I know some women want to throw something at me, but it's not me, it's my wife. So the labor was very quick. Our parents could barely get there in time. And we had this wonderful, beautiful little baby girl. And she was, oh my God, it was just awesome. And I realized when we had this baby that I absolutely need to keep coming to Al-Anon. Because I needed to be the best person I could be for this little girl. About 3 months later, we got pregnant again. And yeah, we know how it works now. She called me. It was in May. She called me on my way home from work, and she says, I think I might be pregnant. And I said, what? There's no way. And she was like, well, yeah, there's a way, and I think I might be pregnant. I'm going to take a test. And I said, okay. And I had quite a commute at that time, so she took the test, and she called me, and she said, yeah, I'm pregnant. And so the Tuesday night meeting I go to, our anniversary meeting is in May, And I had the literature person, I'll never forget, the literature person at that meeting asked me to fill in on the anniversary meeting doing literature because they weren't going to be there. And I said, of course, yes, I will. And then we were pregnant, and then I had no idea what was going on. And I went home and I completely forgot that I had told this person that I would do literature. My wife said to me, why don't you go to the meeting? You've come home. Why don't you go to the meeting? I'm just going to rest anyway. Go to your anniversary meeting. So I got there at like the break, and there's no literature. No, they put out literature, but somebody had said to me, weren't you supposed to cover literature? And I said, oh yeah. And but everything was okay, because we pick it up. If something needs done, we pick it up. You know, we keep our stuff on our Tuesday night meeting in a cabinet, and there's been nights when the person who has the key to the cabinet hasn't shown up, and everything's in there, the format, everything, and you just wing it. You know, we've been doing it long enough that we know the 12 steps. Somebody's got the 12 steps, you know, they've got it in a book, or they've got it on their phone or whatever, and we know them, and it just works. And that's just the beauty of this program again, that especially in the meetings, we just come together to be there for an hour and a half, or whatever it is, for one another, you know? And that's just, like I said, that's one of the reasons I'm so happy that my home group has gone back in person, because it's just so great to see people again. We weren't hugging in the beginning. Now after, we're hugging a little bit more. So about 2 years, not quite 2 years after. Our second daughter was born, the second daughter was born on December 19th. So now we had a 1 year birthday on December 18th, and then she waited. Stella, my younger, waited so Elizabeth could have her birthday, and then my wife woke me up the next morning at like 6:30, and this was going to be my last day of work, and then I was going to take 2 weeks off, and she said, you can't go to work today. I said, I have to go to work today. It's my last day. She's like, oh no, we're going to the hospital. And I said, okay. And so I called work, and we went to the hospital. And we left Burbank at 7 a.m. and we got to Cedar Sinai about 7:30. And then our next one was born at 9:40 a.m. Wow. I know. So now we've got two little babies, and now I really need to make sure I step it up, and I need to be there for them, and a better husband, and a better brother, and a better you know, son and friend, and just everything. And so this has been great. And I would take her in the very beginning. I would take her to the meeting, and I would hold her, and it was just, I would sit there, and it was wonderful. I'll just say that. About a year and 9 months later, we noticed something wasn't exactly. There was something different than with the first daughter. And we would go to the pediatrician, and he would say, you can't, like, she's not talking, she's not, you know, she talks very little, and she's, you know, there's kind of some different stuff. And he said, you can't compare her to Elizabeth, because Elizabeth was ahead of kind of schedule, so you can't compare. Well, finally at 2 years, he said, maybe we should have her tested for autism. And we had her tested, and she tested positive. And she didn't test positive. She tested, you know, right? That's the vernacular. Did you test positive? No, I tested negative. You know, so in these times of COVID, you're gonna see license plates with a TSTDPOS. It was devastating, because you don't know what to do. You know, you don't know, especially when you've got them back to back. You've got two little ones. One of them now, you hear, has autism, and you don't know what to do. And I will tell you, my wife buckled down like never before, and she was a machine with it. Like, she was getting, like, all the services we needed. She was schlepping. We would say Stella was the hardest working girl in Burbank for, like until she was three, because she was literally going to speech therapy, like, four times a week. She was going to occupational therapy, because they said the earlier you start, the better things will be for her later on. And so my wife just buckled down. She wasn't working at the time. Well, because we had babies back to back. So she was, and you know, I made a lot of phone calls, and I went to the meeting and I told people, and the people in these rooms and the people on the other end of the phone, you know, got me through that. And there were people that I talked to. People said, my son has autism and here's what you can expect and things like that. And it was, and if I hadn't had the people in this room, because I didn't know a lot of other people who had kids with autism, and you know, and but the people, and even the people in this room who didn't have kids with autism, they got me to call me anytime. Call me if you're up in the, you know, if you're up at 3:30 in the morning, call me. And now, and right, and no Al-Anon has ever had a good thought at 3:30 in the morning, right? So you know, call me if you need to. And it was it was this program and the people in these rooms that got me through that got me through that. So today they're 18 and 19. They're just wonderful. My older one graduated last year and she goes to college, and she has a job, a part-time job, and she really likes her job. She likes college a little less, but that's okay, whatever, you know, whatever her path is. But I will say this real quick. This is another thing about this program. So there's a study abroad program in the fall that she wants to do. And she didn't discover it until like 3 weeks ago, so she had kind of missed the first two introductory meetings. And I said, oh, but there's an email. She's like, I'm just going to go to this meeting. And I said, yeah, but you really want to go. There's an email on there. Why don't you email and find out if there's still room so that you kind of know? She said, no, I'll just go to the meeting. But you know what? It's not my study abroad trip. It's hers. Like, it's taken every fiber of my being not to send an email and find out if there's still room. But it's not mine, it's hers. And that's you know, what if it wasn't for this program, oh my God, I would have emailed already like four times. But this, you know, but it's not mine to do. I have enough stuff to do, you know? I've got, you know, she's 19 and it's a study abroad. It's not like, you know, it's not like an ambulance rushed her to, you know, St. Joe's in Burbank. I'm like, well, I got some other stuff to do. You know, it's not my problem that she's laying there. It's not, you know, so it's, So she, you know, she's great. Stella's a senior in high school. She's going to graduate in May, and then she's going to kind of go on to a program that they have for the kids with autism and other special needs, and that's great. And everybody right now is good. I'll go back. I'm not going to give you the details, but in the time when the girls were, it was 2009. So the girls were like 7 and 8, I think. 6 and 7, something like that. There was another slip with my wife. This one lasted a little longer, but I didn't know at the beginning. I knew at the end, but I didn't know it had been going on. She was very tricky. And she hit it well, and she then told me about it, and she said, but I want to stop, and I was pissed. I was really mad. And again, if not for this program, I would have bolted. The first time it happened, we didn't have kids. So it was kind of like, whatever we need to do to work this out, it's you and me, we'll buckle down. I will go to my program. I'm not going to manage your program. You know, I'm going to do what I need to do on my end. And I hope that you are going to do on your end what you say you're going to do. And she did, and that was fine. Like I said, this time we had kids, and I was not amused. And I would have bolted if I didn't have this program. Because it happened once, it happened twice. I sure the hell wasn't going to let it happen a third time. But the people in this room walked me through it. They talked me through it. Do you still love her? Of course I love her. You know, has she started back? Yes, she started back. And I kind of white knuckled it. I mean, for a little bit in this, but sometimes we have to white knuckle it in this program too. 'Cause it's like because of the unknown, and we try to get through it as much as we can. And so I did that for a little while, and that time, it was not a good time. But we made it through it, and she has been sober ever since. I don't know if she's gonna if there's gonna be another slip. I don't know. I can't predict it. We'll see what happens when it does. I still love her. You know, we're still a good family. We're good parents, and we'll. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I keep coming back here. I got involved with service after I was the secretary to control that meeting, and I started doing. Oh, this was very funny. I want to tell you this too. Early on, and we've kind of, I think a lot of us have had this. When you're going at Al-Anon in the beginning, and then you see another Al-Anon in public, not in your meeting. And I was on a bus once with my mother. And somebody I know from the program, who I still know very well to this day, was on the bus, and I kind of waved at her, and she kind of waved back, and then I panicked because I'm like, oh shit, my mother's going to want to know who this is, because I didn't tell my family that I was going to Al-Anon in the beginning. I just didn't want to answer the questions. There's a lot of questions in my family, and so I didn't tell them. It's a work friend, and you know, and it was fine, and we went on, but it was very vivid to me at that time. I did tell my family, you know, that I was going, and they knew that my wife went to AA. So it's not like it really should have been a big deal, but there were a lot of questions about AA, and a lot of questions to me, not to her. It's like, ask her, you know, why are you asking me? But they don't get, again, they don't get Al-Anon, and they have a problem with what's in my circle and what's not in my circle. I should, for 22 years, you'd think I remember some of these things, but it's been a very long day. You know, what's inside my circle and what's not inside my circle? Well, everything is in their circles, like everything. And again, because of this program, I've learned to separate that. There's a huge rift going on in my family right now between my father and my brother. And I am just staying out of it because I got lucky that I didn't get pulled into it. It's a business thing, and my wife and I stayed out of it. And oh my God. And I think that it was part of this program and part of her program that we were like, this is probably not a good idea. We should probably stay out of this. And it's a really good thing because things are bad now. And I don't get up and get caught up in the drama, because there's a lot of drama, and that's a lot of what we do. Before the program, I loved the drama. The drama was awesome, right? And so I always wanted to be in the drama because I could always tell you the best way to work it out. That's another thing. When I came into Al-Anon, it was kind of like, well, how am I going to fix these people? And then, you know, you realize, just take care of yourself. Just take care of yourself. And when I started taking care of myself, the weight that came off of my shoulders was just miraculous. And it's, you know, it's part of the steps, it's part of the reaching out, it's part of the sponsorship, it's all of it. And you just become a lighter person. Or I did, you know, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I just became a lighter person. Just, I went through the day just not sulking all the time and everything. And because I didn't have to control my family and I didn't have to control work. I kind of learned early on I shouldn't try to control my wife. That was probably not a good idea. And so we, you know, it just, that's kind of, it, that's another great thing in the program. I want to tell this too while I'm here, because I'll forget this too. So the first convention I ever went to, I came in Al-Anon in April. The first convention I ever went to was the San Fernando Valley Convention in January of the next year. So I didn't have quite a year yet, but it was in Burbank at the time, back at the Hilton or Marriott or whatever it was at the time. And I'm going to go up there to a marathon meeting, But I got there, and then there were all these people, like the lot, like all the AAs and all the Al-Anons, and everybody was there, and it was also very intimidating. And I went into the marathon meeting, and I sat down in this chair, and I didn't know anybody, and it wasn't very full in the beginning, and then all these people kept filing in, and I just kept getting more nervous because I didn't know what I was doing at this convention, and the seat next to me stayed open. And all these people kept filing in, and nobody sat in that seat. And I had showered, and so it was nobody sat there. And then just as the meeting was starting, somebody I knew from my Tuesday night meeting came and looked at me and said, "Is that seat open?" There was no reason that seat should have sat open for that long. But I was nervous and I was uncomfortable, and God left that seat open until that person got there. And that I think was really a God show. Like that was, okay, I need to keep coming back here because there's no reason that seat should have stayed open that long but it was being saved for that person that I knew. I have jumped around so much, but I really just want to express how much this program means to me and how much I've gotten out of it. And I started doing service above the group level. Like I said, I was the service board chairperson. I'm actually now on the LA Intergroup Board of Directors. I was elected in November, and I love doing service. I love giving to this program. I love wanting to make sure that this program is here for us and for the people. You know, alcoholism hasn't gone anywhere. You know, and we've had newcomers at my Tuesday meeting, and you know, because I mean, the last 2 years have been rough, and it's been crazy, and so we. You know, I want to make sure that this program is here for the people who need it. Because yeah, alcoholism isn't going anywhere. I mean, it hasn't shown any signs of going anywhere. And so we need to have this for the people who love alcoholics. I've done service above the group level, and it has really helped. We used to at my meeting, we used to have very contentious group consciences, like really bad, like really bad. And I would learn to sit through those, and I would really, really learn, I would really do what I could to not get caught up in the drama. And I think that prepared me for doing service above the group level. I was the program, right? Program chairperson of this convention 5 years ago, right? I think 5 years?
2016.
Oh, 16? 2016. Okay, 6 years. And it was great. And I helped John that whole weekend. Because kind of once you do the program and once you get all the speakers and the leaders and everything, then your job's, and you have the program printed and everything, then it's your job's kind of easy for the weekend. There's not, you know, you have to greet the leaders and stuff like that, but there's not a lot more to do. There's a marathon committee, so somebody's handling the marathon. So I was just able to be of service of John for the whole weekend, and it was fabulous. I went through some rough times. I went through some times of unemployment. But I have a job. I started a job in September that I love. Like I love, this is the job that I was meant for. And I just turned 54 last month, and I want to be here for the rest of my life now. Like this is like, and I know I've only been there 6 months, but I really, really love this job. I love what we do. I love the people around me, and I just love this job, and I'm so grateful for this job. That's pretty much what I've got. Thank you all for coming tonight. Thank you for listening to my ramble and my bouncing back and forth. I just love the program. I love the people in this program. And it's just, when I go to a meeting, it just stops my head from spinning. Even 22 years later, my head, sometimes I'm still spinning all the time, but I go to a meeting and it just stops my head from spinning, and it just lets me concentrate on what's going on in the room at that. And that's, I mean, that's an amazing thing. And that's it. So I don't, thank you, John, again, for asking me to come. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And that's it. Thank you very much.